Now, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Good morning if you're just after joining us. Very shortly, Garda Sergeant Eunan Walsh will be joining us. We'll have a reflection on the Garda operation, policing the international rally, and also loads of appeals and what have you. You'll hear it all first here on the 9 till noon show. That's coming up very shortly. Just want to get to some of your comments, though. Nebules for nebulizers can't be got. A lot of people with asthma depend on these. Why can't they get pharmacies? Pharmacies effectively are saying they can't get them. Why can't they get them? That's worrying. Preventers, and also having the wee blue one when you need it. I'd be very worried if it was someone close to me couldn't get hold of that. Traffic is always bad into Letterkenny from the Remelton side, but lately it's been continuously worse, says a listener. The traffic is back as far as Alcorn's turnoff. I work in the Old Town area. That trip would usually take 40 minutes. Now it's constantly an hour and 20 minutes. The lights have made the situation worse. There needs to be a solution to this road. I don't think the new lights are working. On Monday, I ended up having to turn and take another route. And the problem is there's not many alternatives, is there? I know the route you're talking about, and that's a long commute. You know, if you're in Dublin or something like that there and living in a commuter town, you might sort of say, right, well, that's part and parcel of city life, but really it shouldn't take that long to get into and through Letterkenny. I have a lot of sympathy for that listener. Hi, Greg Keelan, who was on earlier on, by the way. If you weren't listening in the first hour, you can listen back in the podcast. It goes live at 1:30 or watch back on YouTube later. Keelan rescued a gentleman from a house fire. At this point, when he went in, Keelan went in, the smoke, you couldn't see. He had to feel around and follow the gentleman's voice, carried him out, called 999. Then the house went really up and windows blew out and everything. No doubt he saved that man's life. Lots of you responding to that story. Here's some. Keelan is a great, caring young man with a heart of gold. To have him as a nephew and an employee is an asset. It goes to show not all heroes wear capes. That comes in from Nicky. Well, Nicky, get the man a cape. He deserves one. There's another one here. What a wonderful young man. Well done, Keelan. Hear, hear. We all agree. Hi, Greg. €5 for two battered sausages in Donegal Town. Oh, my word. There's going to come a point where people are pricing themselves out of it. Two battered sausages for a fiver. And I do like a battered sausage, I ain't going to lie. It's one of those treat things, though. I couldn't eat them all the time. But I digress. You wouldn't stop in Dublin City with a bike or scooter because if you turned your head, it would be gone in a flash. That's why you didn't see many on bikes or scooters. You referred how rough Dublin is. I didn't find it rough. I don't think anywhere is that rough that you can't cycle around. And I mean, we can't get run away from ourselves here. I mean, we're not all that scared, are we? Of course, you can cycle around, scoot around Dublin without fear of being assaulted, if that's what you're talking about. It's not that bad. Like, you know, it is a big city. I don't think that's the reason why people aren't scooting. If you're on about your head being gone in a flash, maybe by wing mirrors or something, yes, I certainly could understand that. But you could text back in and clarify what you meant. There was a German girl very recently attacked and raped. 9 immigrants involved out of a total of 12. Where is an outrage for attack like this? The Germans are absolutely outraged. Where is the outrage in Donegal to an attack in Germany, as horrific as it is? I wouldn't anticipate that. And as if this in some way sort of mitigate against the beating of this woman in the street. I'm not sure. 4 involved in the beginning, and as she was leaving, another 2 caught her. Then they called the friends who also assaulted her. Of all involved, 1 got jail time. German leaders betrayed their people. Sounds horrendous in terms of sentencing there. Hi, Greg. The media must demand that the AG's advice is published on the constitutional ramifications of the EU Migrant Pact. For the problem is that our own government and media has adopted an extremist position with regard to mass immigration. There's no position here been adopted. Try and get more information on it. We've tried. As I said before, someone suggested Michael McDougall. We can reach out to him. Maybe he might talk about it. I mean, obviously, I'm interested in the direct consequences of it. We can do a whataboutery as to how great it could be or how bad it would be. But it is there locked in as a pact. What actually does it mean for this country? I would love to get that information. And trust me, we are endeavouring to do so. Okay, we're going to take a break now. Stay with us. Garda Sergeant Eunan Walsh is going to take his seat and run through the latest appeals and information. And we'll also have figures on arrests across the weekend from County Donegal.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, protecting what you value most. Call today and get your zero-wire alarm system from €299. Sheridan Security, 91-26025.
And a very good morning to Kathy, Danny, Beth, Audrey and Mary, amongst the hundreds watching us on our social media. Don't forget you can watch this item and everything on the 9 till noon show every day from 9 to 12 on our YouTube channel, on your smart TV or your Fire Stick, and across Facebook and X. Okay, we're joined in studio now by Garda Sergeant Eunan Walsh from the Letterkenny Garda Station. Good morning to you, Eunan. Thank you very much for your time.
Morning, Greg. How are you today?
I'm doing good. You and your good colleagues, and we'll talk about this later, a little later on. Really, really busy weekend.
Yeah, very hectic with the rally, Greg. Yeah. And we're all out the other side of it, and everybody's in one piece, thank God.
Brilliant. As I say, we'll talk a little more about that. But we'll get to appeals first, if that's okay. And starting with a road traffic collision in Letterkenny, Eunan.
Yes, Garda and Letterkenny are currently investigating a collision, Greg, one car collision that occurred in the early hours of Monday morning, so Sunday night morning, Monday morning, at approximately 2:45 a.m. on the main Letterkenny to Kilmacrennan Road, the N56 at Balladurg, Letterkenny. The car was travelling from Letterkenny towards the Liston when the collision occurred. The car left the road and collided with a fence. The driver and two passengers were taken to Letterkenny University Hospital to receive treatment for injuries sustained, none of which we believe to be life-threatening. So we're appealing to anybody who have made travel along the route at the time, whose dash cam, to make the footage available to us. And again, anybody who may have witnessed the collision to contact the Garda station at Letterkenny 07491 67100. That's a collision which occurred on Sunday night, Monday morning at approximately 2:45 a.m.
Now, we are also seeking information in relation to a burglary in Dunloe.
Yes, this is a burglary, Greg, which occurred in the area of Sheshkinarone in Dunloe between 5 p.m. last Friday the 21st and 10:30 a.m. on Saturday morning. So sometime Friday night, a canteen window was broken and glass in the toilet door was smashed. Entry was gained inside the area and the area was ransacked. Fortunately, nothing was stolen, but again, substantial damage was caused. So if anybody was in the area and observed any suspicious activity, be it people or vehicles, we asked them to make contact with us. And again, if you can assist with the matter, we're asking you to contact Milford Garda Station 07491 53060, or again the confidential line 1-800-666-111.
Our next appeal in relation to criminal damage in Carndonagh.
Yes, this is a damage incident that occurred at Abbotswood area of Carndonagh between 8 p.m. last Thursday the 20th of June and 9 a.m. on the Friday morning the 21st. So again, sometime on Thursday evening, Friday morning. Pane of glass in the front door of a house and also pane of glass in a sitting room window were smashed between those times. So we are particularly interested in hearing from anybody who may have been in that area at the time, particularly between 3:30 a.m. and 4:30 a.m. we believe, that Friday morning. And again, if any observed any suspicious activity or they have any relevant information, to contact the Garda station at Buncranagh 07493205 40.
And that's those ones in the middle of the night, they're tricky, aren't they? Because the chances of someone seeing something might be slimmer, but it might stand out more if someone witnessed something.
Exactly,
so it's a double-edged sword, isn't it?
That time of the morning, there wouldn't many be people about. So apart from the people involved in the crime, there wouldn't be many other people. So if you see anybody or anything suspicious, to contact the guards, please.
And again, this would stand out like a sore thumb if anyone saw it. It's the theft from a car park in Letterkenny.
Yes, it occurred in the car park off the Port Road near the station roundabout, what is known locally as Isle Lane, in the early hours of Sunday morning, the 23rd of June. So approximately sometime after 3 a.m. Saturday night, Sunday morning last, four alloy wheels were taken from a Volkswagen Jetta that had been parked at the location. Damage was caused to the car during the removal of the alloys, and the car had been unlocked and entry was gained, but nothing was stolen from the interior. We're interested in speaking to anybody who may have travelled in the area of the Port Road and his dash cam at those times between 2:30 a.m. and 3:30 a.m. And again, anybody who may have been offered the sale of the alloys, to contact the Gardaí in Letterkenny 07491 67100, or again, Greg, the confidential line 1-800-666-111.
Yeah, I wanted to do the break-in looking for the safety nut remover. But anyway, either way, It's quite specific. Someone's going to put these alloys for a Jetta or similar vehicle up for sale, or they're going to put them on their own car. So someone's going to know something potentially. Home heating oil thefts. Not the typical type of year that we report on these, but it happened nonetheless, Eunan.
Yes, we were recently contacted by a holiday homeowner in the Marabeg area of Downings in relation to theft of home heating oil that occurred between Monday the 17th of June at 3 p.m. and 1:30 p.m. and Friday the 21st of June 3 p.m. So sometime between last Monday afternoon and Friday afternoon, home heating oil had been delivered on the Monday the 17th, but was stolen at some stage over the course of that week, Greg. So again, anybody in the area who observed anything suspicious between the 17th and the 21st of June to contact the Gardaí at Milford, 07491 53060.
Okay, let's get to some questions that come in over the course of the last week. This one reads as follows, Eunan. I went to a Donegal Garda station and no one was in. I rang a number and they told me that I needed to make an appointment. I drove to Ballyshannon to get a form signed. If no Gardaí are in the Garda station, where can we go for a chat?
Yeah, you can contact your local district headquarters station, Greg, and they are open 24/7 basis in Letterkenny. Down the road here, 07491 67100, Ballyshannon 07198 58530, Buncrana 07493 20540, or Milford 07491 53060. You can call to any of these Garda stations in person at any time of the day or night, or you can chat to someone. If you wish to meet a Garda at a different station, then you can contact any of the above stations, their district headquarters, and we can make arrangements for the local guard to get in touch with you.
Yeah, and you see time for time, I think, on the Garda Síochána Conor Facebook page, you know, like the, I don't want to mention a Garda station, but such and such a Garda station will be open between certain times for form signing and that type of stuff. So well worth keeping an eye on that page as well. But you can also ring, as Eunan mentioned, and find out more info there. Funny, you know, and I suppose it's not a bad thing really, but one of the biggest complaints that we got in over the course of the rally, and it's not just at the course of the rally, is very, very loud exhaust. You know the noise, you know the pop, all that kind of stuff. And a listener wants to know, what's the story with illegal exhausts? The Gardaí monitoring those regularly?
Well, we do have decibel meters for reading the decibel leader readings of exhaust, and we do carry out check at vehicles at checkpoints for illegal modifications, including modifications to people's exhausts. And we can seize vehicles if they deem them to be dangerous or defective. And indeed, some of the modifications, I think Sergeant Kilcoyne was on a couple of weeks ago, some of the modifications will impact on your insurance if you don't notify your insurance policy. And therefore, we can also seize the vehicles for those reasons. So by, I suppose by way of information, you're breaking the law if you remove your silencer or make any change that would make that vehicle emit a noise louder than the original exhaust before your modification.
So, right, okay, so that's really interesting. So if I change the back box at all and it's louder than the that it was made with, that's...
Yes, and you have to be, the reading, I think, is 99 decibels.
Right, okay.
So, but I think in what happened over the weekend, and I suppose in many rallies, is that they're not actually, it's not the breaking the law with the exhaust, it's the revving.
Yeah.
So it's like a normal car, me and you get into our car, we can rev our cars and make noise. The exhaust is legal, but it's just the actually noise pollution. That's,
how loud it is.
Yes.
Okay.
That's the problem for people, you know.
Right. Thanks for that. Next question. I have a disability parking badge. Can you park anywhere with it? A certain place I park in has cars with no badges in it. At times I wish people would realise they shouldn't park in these spaces unless they have a badge up, minus my photo. I had a man asking me once, had I a disability? Some people have disabilities that doesn't show like mine. Some of that's a comment, but the question really is I have a disability badge for parking. Can you park anywhere with it?
Yes, you disabled parking permit. You can park in a designated on-street parking bay free of charge for an unlimited time unless it states otherwise. So generally, and I think in Letterkenny, all street parking spaces and local authority car parks provide parking free of charge to the permit holder. And again, there may be time restrictions in some areas. I don't believe there is in Letterkenny. So always check the signs. Private car parks may have different rules. Mm. So again, we don't get involved in private car parks.
So in other words, they set the rules. So if it's a car park for a shopping centre and they say 2 hour maximum stay and you get clamped after 2.5 hours, you would hope they wouldn't do it to someone with a disabled parking badge, but that's a civil matter.
That's a matter between the owners of the shop premises or the car park and the person who owns the vehicle.
And of course, discouraging people who don't have a pass to discourage people from parking in those spaces, and the fines and enforcement have increased somewhat too.
Yes, we appeal to motorists to avoid parking in disabled bays. Never park in a disabled bay unless you have a permit to do so. Be considerate and leave disabled parking bays for those who are legally entitled to use them. And again, as you say, you're liable to a fine, fixed charge notice of €150. And it's something that we discuss regularly in the station and when we're briefing our members before going on patrols and stuff to check the disabled parking bays.
Yeah, okay, good stuff. A reminder that there is a recruitment drive at the moment for the Garda Reserve.
Yes, the Garda Síochána is now inviting applicants from those aged 18 to 60 to join the Garda Reserves on a voluntary basis. Okay, these are voluntary members of Garda Síochána. And for way of information, an information stand in relation to the recruitment campaign will be at the Courtyard Shopping Centre today between 1 p.m. and 3 p.m. and next Sunday between 1 p.m. and 3 p.m. So do please call along and if you're interested in joining the Reserves. And again, those interested in applying to reserve should visit www.publicjobs.ie with the closing date, the 3 p.m. on the 4th of July. So the Garda Reserves are a great asset to us, Greg. They provide support during policing operations, enhance ties with local communities and bring a wide range of skills and talents. So just by way of information, we reached out to the reserve organisation for the rally this year. And we had reserves working over the weekend from places as far away from Macroom, Clonmel, Tipperary, Store Street, Talla, and Tramore, County Waterford. Believe it or not, that's the distance they travelled to provide support for us.
And we needed the support because it was an incredible busy weekend in Donegal. Not only lots of people within the county doing lots of things, but lots of people from outside the county coming in to. There was more on than just the rally union.
Yeah, it was a busy weekend throughout Donegal. Showcasing our amenities, our beautiful country. Three significant events taking place. The rally, obviously. Sea Sessions in Mundoran and the Amateur Golf Open at Ballyliffin. I suppose for a breakdown of the most significant stats, over the course of the weekend, there were 103 arrests in the Donegal Division, Thursday to Monday, inclusive. Again, 66 public order, 19 drug detections, 34 vehicles seized, 31 dangerous driving incidents, 13 drink drivers, 18 drug drivers and 13 assaults. Arrests across the division over the course of the weekend, but the most noticeable number of arrests were within Letterkenny, Greg, obviously, the centre for the rally, and it drew the bulk of the crowds as it does every year.
Now, I did comment before you were in, and it's only fair to say it whilst you're sitting here. I'm not, and I'll say exactly what I said the last time, I'm not sort of necessarily being critical of previous operations. But it really felt this year that Gardaí and those working with them were being incredibly proactive right from the get-go, you know, in a couple of days in advance and what have you. And I think really that, I think the figures tell the tale of that. Was that a conscious effort, Eunan, or was it a similar operation to previous years?
I don't think we make an effort every year. We're improving every year. We're learning every year. Like this year, our first rally meeting was held in February.
Yeah.
We had a committee, Superintendent Kelly, Inspector Paul McGee, Inspector Seamus McGonigal, Roads Police Inspector, myself, a number of other Roads Police and Sergeants. And what we're doing this year more than ever is that we engage with other agencies. Mm-hmm. Always engaging with the rally, obviously, Motorsport Ireland, the Donegal County Council, the Ambulance Service, the Fire Service, you know, and we got our heads together and we came up with numerous suggestions. But I think locally for us, the biggest thing is the number of Gardaí that we had from other divisions on temporary transfer.
I saw bikes, patrol cars everywhere, and a sizeable presence on the streets as well.
Yes, we had up to 60 guards on temporary transfer, as I said to you, including our reserves from places like Mayo, Galway, Dundalk, Monaghan, Cavan, our public order units, two public order units from Dundalk and Galway. And I suppose over the weekend of Letterkenny, the weekend of the rally, I suppose I'm not a great man for stats because sometimes it gives the wrong impressions. the two people. That were 84 arrests in Letterkenny over the weekend. Excuse me, 9 drink driving, 13 drug driving, 6 dangerous driving, which is a significantly low figure for dangerous driving compared to other years, in that we didn't see the large scale diffing on public roads. And as we say locally, that's because of the yellow jackets. We say we need yellow jackets on the street, on the beat, on our bikes, walking the town. 50 of the 84 arrests, Greg, were public order incidents, and none of them were a major incident, so they're minor public order offences. So again, some bench warrants were executed. And again, we'd like to thank everybody who came to Donegal over the weekend, especially to the rally, and who complied with the law. The message is, you're welcome to our county, you're welcome to come at any time, but you must comply with the law. Obey the rules of the rules at all time.
Yeah, and I mean, it's probably very clear at this stage to identify the troublemakers that are almost landing in intent on causing bother.
Yes, and like every year, there is a cohort of people who arrive every year for the rally kid with no intention of abiding by any rules, and they go out of their way to cause trouble. And with that in mind, we had a number of special sittings where people were arrested and brought to court that evening or the next morning, where they were dealt with very quickly. So we're pleased that no major incidents occurred on or off our roads over the course of the weekend. And again, thank you to everybody who obeyed by the law. You are very welcome to come to our county, to the rally at any time. But again, you must obey by the rules.
A couple of things of note, a couple of additions. Alfie, the I don't know what you call it, the drugs.
Yeah, Alfie
drugs
was up
dog.
For the weekend, yeah. I was chatting him on Friday, actually.
Any crack?
He was good form, yeah.
All right, good stuff.
Alfie assisted in a number of searches and checkpoints throughout Donegal Division, Greg, as part of Operation Tara. In total, controlled drugs with a market value of €16,000 and €4,000 cash were seized over the course of the weekend during a number of searches, along with
Paraphernalia?
Paraphernalia, yes. Yeah. Associated with the sale and supply of drugs. 4 males were arrested on suspicion of possession drugs for the purpose of sale and supply, interviewed and released pending analysis of the drugs and submission of a file to the DPP. And again,
of course, this is useful information, I presume, as well, because these aren't just isolated. I presume they focus, they can sort of feed into the wider Operation Tara.
Yes, again, drugs don't happen just at major events. Yeah. It's an ongoing problem. And the focus of Operation Tara is to disrupt, dismantle and prosecute those involved in drug trafficking networks. And again, individuals and groups involved in drug trade will be targeted. They'll be the target of enforcement activity based on intelligence received by us. And again, anybody who may have information in relation to the sale and supply of drugs, please contact the Divisional Drugs Unit, 1-8-07491-67100, or again, Greg, the confidential line, 1-800-666-111.
And just finally on the rally, I saw some photos on the God of Shoe Connors Facebook page of a very fancy golf. What was that all about?
Yeah, I saw it. It made its appearance at Highland Radio too.
That's right. I saw the boys out there. That's where
excited.
I saw it. I didn't see it on your Facebook.
So this is a new initiative, Operation Nexus. It was launched on last Thursday night at the ceremonial start of the rally. I was actually there myself. And I have to say, it drew more attention than some of the rally cars. So I'm not sure if Rory Kenny and the boys were a bit jealous, but we were there anyway. So this car was seized during an operation that uncovered large volumes of illegal drugs and unexplained cash destined to cause harm in our society. So that's one benefit of it. It is now used for road safety education to keep people safe. And as you know, cars bring great enjoyment and freedom to our lives. And for safety reasons, there are regulations about, as we said before, about modifications can be made to our cars. So we are opening up to with car enthusiasts, and particularly young male drivers.
I think it's a common denominator too, because, you know, at the end of the day, you want to be able to, I don't know, I think it was last week, Granny said, you know, come up and say hello to us or what have you. You know, anything you can sort of a common talking point to build relationships and that with the younger people. So Gardaí are not necessarily seen as the enemy.
Yes, it went down very well. It did attract a lot of attention. So we're very pleased with how it worked.
Did you have a scotch?
Because of the type of vehicle, only certain people were permitted to drive it. I didn't make the cut. So
all right. And listen, you know, above all, We should be very thankful. Some of it's good policing, others, but part of it's good behaviour. Some of it's luck. But we got through a very busy weekend between C sessions, the golf and the rally. Thankfully, no serious injury or death on our roads, and no serious assaults or anything like that. You know, a one-punch incident, you know, those type of things that can happen at some of these events. So, as I say, it's through good work and effort, and there's always a wee bit of luck in there. But isn't it nice to be able to reflect back and not have to talk about any, you know, very, very serious instances, Eoin?
No, it's like we don't get everything right, Gig, and I'm happy when the people are happy, and the feedback to date is reasonably good. So, but if anybody has any complaints, anything that we may improve on for next year moving forward, please let us know and we'll discuss that too.
Thanks so much, Eoin. That's Garda Sergeant Eoin Walsh from the Letterkenny Garda Station. That was Community Garda information for this Tuesday, the 25th of June. It'll be back just after the 10 o'clock next, 10 o'clock news next Tuesday. Now, onto something completely different. We welcome onto the programme now Kelly Matthews, author of Brian Friel Beginnings. Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning.
Lovely to see you. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you keeping?
Doing well, thank you. It's great to be here.
Yes, indeed. Now, we're going to talk about this book, but I kind of want to sort of establish with you how you came across the Brian Friel story. What was the background there, Kelly? Is Brian Friel a man you were familiar with, or was it a nice coincidence that you stumbled across him?
Oh, I've been familiar with Brian Friel for a long time. I'm a fan of the theater. I participated in college theater myself as a student. So I've seen as many Brian Friel plays as I can in person over the course of many years. And I did my degrees in Irish literature. So I became very interested actually in the kind of middle of the 20th century, that period in Ireland. I think it's a really interesting time that doesn't get enough attention. I had written a book about the Bell magazine, which was published in Dublin in the 1940s and 50s. And I was interested then in expanding on, you know, my knowledge of that time period and perhaps writing a book about radio and particular theater on the radio. So I went to the BBC archives 8 years ago in 2016, and the BBC written archives are actually in England, pretty far outside London. They're in Reading. And that's where I stumbled across, in a way, I had requested as many papers as they had related to Brian Friel, but I did not know how many papers they had, and nor did they really, and nor did the Friel family when I contacted them for permission to quote from these letters to write about them. And from there, followed the trail.
So to some extent, some of this information, or at least how it's delivered or the source of it, it's new to the family as well, let alone the listener or the reader,
Absolutely. I had a book launch in Derry last night and was talking with two of Brian's children, Judy Friel and David Friel. And when I approached them, you know, in a more professional way through Mr. Friel's agent in London, they were equally surprised to learn that there was a large trove of letters in England between Brian Friel and Ronald Mason, also known as Ronnie Mason, who was a drama producer for BBC Radio in Belfast.
And he would have been a mentor of Brian's.
Yes, in every way, to be honest. Well, every way that related to writing. The BBC was doing a lot to nurture writers of radio plays at that time. So he invited Brian to come to Belfast and reimbursed his train fare. They spent a couple of hours over lunch talking. They were both around the same age, which I believe is how they first hit it off. They came from actually very different backgrounds. Ronald Mason was from Ballymena and was a classmate of Ian Paisley's. So you can imagine very different backgrounds to Brian Friel's. But later on, you know, Ronald Mason actually went to Brian and Anne's house in Derry. That happened multiple times. They visited each other back and forth over many years. And in all of those visits, Brian Friel and Ronald Mason would spend hours reworking the script of Brian's first plays, which were two plays that he wrote for the radio.
And of course, Kelly, will learn in the reading of the book, Brian Friel Beginnings, but the correspondence, the exchanges, they were personal, were they, you know what I mean, or very businesslike? Yeah.
No, they were very personal right from the beginning. You know, I was struck by that. And that's what struck me when I was reading these.
So through that, you get a more of an insight then into sort of the development of a person as an individual and in their relationships, but then obviously how that formulates their work and the rest of their career.
Yes, absolutely. And the voice that comes through is very clear from the very beginning and very warm and funny a lot of times. Mm. I mean, you know, Brian Friel's first letter to Ronald Mason said, "Thank you for being young and please get your hair cut often." I don't know what that related to, but, you know, that was after their first, what would have been a business-like meeting. But, you know, right away there was a personal connection. And that it's also worth remembering that at that time period, and this is going back to 1957, you know, at that time period, letters, written letters on a typewriter or handwritten, posted through the mail, that's the equivalent of our text messages today. So they often were very personal and very revealing. And there were other, you know, they did discuss some details of their personal lives. Brian and Anne, you know, were married at that time and already had two children. As I say, Ronald Mason never married. You know, he journeyed frequently between London and Belfast. So that's where it began for me.
So in this process, being familiar with the work that we all know now, did you sort of see the early shoots of that in this conversation? And it must have felt like a great privilege, but also then a great responsibility to sort of connect one with the other.
In every way, yes. Everything you just said. I absolutely saw the beginnings and the preoccupations, you know, from the very beginning, a focus on, for example, relationships between fathers and sons, a focus on the dichotomy between the way, kind of the face we present to the public, face that the world sees, and then our private lives at home, kind of who's he when he's at home. His, you know, Brian's first radio plays were about that same dichotomy that then was explored in Philadelphia, Here I Come. The fathers and sons relationship was later explored in Translations. And of course, Dancing at Lunasa, you know, so many ways. And then there's also a real interest that Friel had from an early stage in memory versus truth. And we look at the play Faith Healer, for example, where you have three characters, each isolated on stage, telling three different versions of the same story, and we're not sure which one to believe. You know, that's where he got to eventually, but in his early work, you can see that he was already interested in those topics.
So when you started sort of, you know, going through this material and your own, I suppose, green shoots started to flourish as to what you might do with it, when did it become clear to you, or how soon did it become clear to you that there was a full book in this material?
Oh, I love that question, because that's really, you know, I initially thought, I wasn't actually aware of how much Friel wrote for the radio. And so initially I thought, ooh, I need to add a chapter on him to my book, you know, a chapter. and I went home back to the US. I took thousands, actually, of digital photographs in the BBC archives and went home and started to try to, because they were in a file and they were somewhat orderly. I mean, what's great about the BBC, and I later journeyed to the New Yorker archives, where they also had the same system. These are two very well-funded organizations. So they kept carbon copies of every outgoing letter, as well as every letter that came in from Friel. And that's what's enormously helpful, is to see both sides of that conversation. That's very rare, actually, in archives. So I thought, but they weren't necessarily in chronological order. There were multiple folders. Mm-hmm. There were other materials like contracts and scripts. And so as a researcher, you know, and I had trained, you know, I published my book on the Bell magazine after writing a PhD thesis on it at Ulster University in Coleraine, where I was a student until 2009. So I had a method of working through archival material and started to type up a chart for myself, trying to put all of the letters in order. And when that chart grew to 68 pages, just a chart with two lines for each item I had found, each letter or script or memo, 68 pages of just a bare chronology, I thought, this is more than a chapter. I believe this needs to be a book. And that's when I took the initiative to go to,
a remarkable move, actually, to sort of say, well, is there another untapped source here? But before we move to that, if you could, sort of the Brian Friel, the person in these exchanges, the early exchanges, how would you describe his personality traits? Arrogant, confident, vulnerable, you know, moldable. I don't know. Like, did you sort of Could you sort of assess for us what you his the character that came through from these early correspondence?
Yes, he was surprisingly vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because later, I think in life, he became known as aloof, let's say. I don't want to say arrogant, but there were certain interviews that he gave where he, and even his instructions to directors of his plays, he wanted his script to be unchanged.
That was a confidence in his work, I suppose.
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And so the confidence is there from the beginning, and certainly incredible drive, incredible level of perseverance and determination, but absolute hunger for feedback. And he made lots of changes to his early plays. That's what really struck me too, is, you know, his, so for example, we've been talking about Ronald Mason. Ronald Mason would go on to cut 25% of his first radio play and edit it down, pare it down. And I think actually Friel learned a lot about economy of language, kind of less is more. And that's also part of the radio format. There's a certain amount of time. It had to be a 55-minute script, not a 90-minute script. Mm-hmm. So,
and I would say, say Brian Friel would far prefer to write something to the 55 minutes than to have a third party try and influence the cuts.
Yes, and that's probably, you know, that also speaks to the integrity of his relationship with the producers, that they made those cuts together. So his producer, Mason, absolutely respected the ownership of the writer. But even what's interesting to me is there's there's memos kind of behind the scenes that Brian never saw that Mason sent to his, you know, he'd send these diplomatic kind of letters saying, I think we need to go over it again, need some cutting. And then he would write to his supervisor, the last 10 pages of the play are plain old bad. You know, the script needs heavy cutting, you know, things like that.
There's a bit of management. I think there's a bit of personality management there.
Absolutely. A lot of diplomacy.
And also, too, the amazing source material you have for this book, two things. You mentioned already the New York Public Library. Again, fantastic that the archives are there. But I think particularly what makes all of that special, he was exchanging with Roger Angle, who was, you know, there's a lot of, he was quite lengthy in his responses and good exchanges for you to work on there. But then you actually got to speak to, at 98 years of age, Angle. So if you had any doubt of the tone or the meaning of the relationship, what an amazing thing then to have access to him, to speak to him, to either confirm what you knew or to add a little bit more nuance or context to these exchanges.
Yes, and that was an incredible privilege as well. It took me a couple of years on from the radio research to find how much was in the New Yorker, and that was really just based on a hunch. And since I live in Boston, it wasn't a very difficult journey to go down to the New Yorker archives for a few days once I found out. I didn't quite know where they were, but I immediately saw the same, you know, the same candor, the same humor, the same length. These were very lengthy letters back and forth between Friel and Roger Angel, and the depth of their friendship. So I knew who Angel was. He's actually very well known in the U.S. As a writer himself. Interestingly, he became a writer who's best known for his writings about baseball. He was writing short stories though at the time when he had just started as New Yorker fiction editor. So he too was quite young. There's definitely a fellowship of and young energy, kind of youthful energy. And so I had to find channels to reach out to him. He was 98 years of age. So I also wanted to do it sooner rather than later. but as soon as I was able to make contact, I sent an email in 2018. And his wife responded to me because he had actually lost most of his eyesight by that time. He wasn't able to type emails, but you know, she wrote back to me with a lengthy email. Roger would love to talk to you. He was a great friend of Brian's, and please come to our apartment. They hosted me for lunch, which became a 3-hour conversation. I was allowed to record all of it, which again, just such an honor and a privilege and a blessing to confirm so much of it.
Yeah, I think the answer, if the answer is no, that's okay too, because Roger's had a very long life and met a lot of people, and we live in a very big world. How significant was? How much significance did he place on his sort of interactions with Brian Friel? Was he like, oh, I remember that young writer or blah, blah, blah? Or is this something that I wonder he's told, you know, his young people around him, or his, you know, I actually was in contact with the late great Brian Friel.
They had a lot of contact at the time, so I think it was well known for him. Anyway, it was certainly until about the 1970s when Friel really stopped writing short stories. There's, you know, some great letters in the New Yorker of Angel asking him, "Do you think you'll ever write another short story?" You know, and it seems like he never published another one, but it was very clear to hear from Roger Angel that this was a deep friendship.
Okay.
And that he said, you know, other people remarked on how close we were at the time. And Angel actually published a great book at age 90, I think six, so just a year or two before I talked with him, called This Old Man. And Friel wrote to him. Well, so it must have been before 26, before he died. Brian wrote a letter to Roger congratulating him on the book.
Oh,
so
lovely.
Even into their 80s and 90s, they were still in contact.
Okay, so the book is Brian Friel Beginnings. It's available anywhere you'd expect to find a fine book like this. Kelly, obviously, I think you've done a very important work here in telling an untold story for the most part, but also in archiving this for future generations as well, because it fills in gaps. Just a purely out of curiosity, are these the material that you discovered? Yes, it was there, may never have been found in both New York and London. Is more weight given to that material now that you've sort of uncovered it and shone a light on it, I wonder?
I hope so. And I have, you know, that is my goal as a researcher. For all of us who are engaged in archival research, we're also trying to light the path for future researchers. So I believe there is more work to be done on this. I've footnoted, well, I endnoted every single letter that I studied. They're available in the BBC archives. Mm. So I would love it if other people would look more closely at this. I did write two academic articles kind of to test the waters and also to get permission. You know, the processes of getting permission from the BBC and the Friel Estate and all the other sources, I thought I'll test the waters a little bit with a couple of academic articles. So those are published and available. But certainly one of them is available for free online on JSTOR. And I hope others will delve into these, absolutely.
Kelly, congratulations in getting it all together. And give us an insight actually to the actual, all of the work that has to go into getting this into our hands. And it's not just physical work, it's testing waters, as you mentioned, and seeing which way the wind's blowing and stuff. So thank you so much for your such a detailed and long insight into that. Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Kelly Matthews there. She's author of Brian Friel Beginnings. I'm sure many of you out there will be interested in that.